It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. We have a great show today. Alyssa Montanti. She's been on 60 Minutes, CNN Heroes, and in my opinion, when you're done with this show, you'll know she really is a hero. Alyssa's going to talk with us today about her incredible Global Medical Relief Fund, something she started in 1997, and it's really helped, in my opinion, the world. It brought the world together, and I'm just so excited to have Alyssa on to, this morning. Alyssa, are you with us today?
I am. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you waking up. So when I was preparing for the show, Alyssa, I was really just struck by your humanity and everything you've gone through since really, you know, 1996, 1997. So if you'll permit, I always like to get a little bit of the background on kind of what was the origination of your wonderful mission in life, your purpose. I've been doing this over 6 months, and I find a commonality is that the folks that are coming on the show, they're not only wonderful people, but something inspired them. They found a purpose in life, which you all want to feel inspired. So can you walk us through kind of what your life was like before Global Medical Relief Fund in that 1996 time period? What was up?
Okay, so I was working as a lab assistant, and I've always had a passion for music. And I was asked by a friend if I would pen some lyrics to write a song for a very local fundraiser here in Staten Island that was for the purpose of raising money for toys and school supplies for the children of Bosnia. I knew little of what was happening other than what I read in the papers and, you know, that they were having this horrific war going on. And so I did research, and I titled the song Let's Do a Miracle. They used the song for the morning, for the kickoff of the fundraiser, and I later read an article about the ambassador in the paper. And I thought perhaps maybe I could do more, and I contacted him at the UN, and I said, you know, maybe we could raise more money for toys and school supplies. So actually, I waited 2 months to have a meeting with him, and when I did, he thanked me so much for my interest. But he said, you know, actually, we have much stronger needs. And he reached in his drawer, and he handed me a letter from this 11-year-old boy that had written to him asking for two new arms and a leg. And the sort of pencil cases flew out the window. I saw this boy's picture, and I read his letter. Actually, that the father wrote, and my life changed. I knew I wanted to do something to help him, and so I contacted hospital, prosthetic company, airlines, and I was determined to help him somehow. In the meantime, I was going through some anxiety because I had lost my mother, my grandmother, my childhood sweetheart. And it was almost like a prayer was answered because I had prayed, God, please help me with this anxiety that I'm feeling. Fast forward, little did I know that that prayer would be answered in the form of a letter from a boy written halfway around the world. Because I helped this boy, I brought him here. He lived with me and my 150-pound Newfoundland dog for 4 months, and he received two new arms and a leg. And when he went back, of course, I'm fast-forwarding, it's when I wanted to start to help more children.
Yeah, Alyssa, and obviously I have a lot to cover, and I just wanted to go back, and this is one of the beautiful things about you, and you're so transparent and willing to share. And I wanted everybody to really understand about kind of where really your life was at that point in time. So was that around 96, 97 approximately?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Right. So from what I gather, you were going through a lot of personal issues. You lost loved ones. From what I understood, you lost your mom, your grandmother, your childhood sweetheart. And you were having panic attacks. You're very anxious. And a lot of people go through stuff in life. And it's sad when you lose a loved one and you're kind of like knocked out, don't know which way to go. I had a great friend on recently, Linda Graziano of Canvas of Hope. And when you're on the ground, you got to figure out how to get back up and keep on fighting.
Right.
But the thing was, you said your prayer was answered, and what was really interesting when I was learning more about your really incredible humanity, I learned about how a young boy, 11-year-old kid in Bosnia, the other side of the world, touched your life in so many ways, and you said your prayer was answered. Were you praying for something at that point? It was just like something that just kind of came about?
You know, what happened was, while Kenan is his name, while he was here, I found that while I was helping him, he was putting me back together, you know, and there's really, really profound truth in when you help someone, you're healing yourself, you know, and this just happened. And I really felt that my prayer was answered by that, you know, I found that nothing in life is a coincidence, nothing. And we bonded, you know, and it was he that really is the cause of the charity, because I wanted to help more children like him.
Right. Now, you talked about, Alyssa, you got involved, from what I understand, you were doing like a fundraiser, and then all of a sudden the ambassador had, you know, given you information about this young boy, Kenan. And there was a picture, and, you know, I was, once again, I try to do my best for myself and for the listeners to be as prepared as possible. And I was looking at some of these pictures of these kids ravaged by war, and, the humanity of when you see someone who lost a limb, or someone so innocent, a young boy at 11, I understand he was playing soccer and a landmine had blown many of his body parts off, sadly. And when you saw that picture, because a lot of people see different things, the question is, what do you do about it? What makes you go forward and do something? Because a lot of people want to help, but a lot of people sit on the sidelines. But what was it that just kind of drew you in at that point in time when you saw that picture?
I was in the pulse of the medical field, and I said to myself, that, you know, why can't I help him, you know? And I went to doctors that I was working, you know, with at the time, and I said, is there any way? And they said, yeah, we'd love to if we could. What caused me, I just felt a need. I can't tell you. Other than it was like almost an epiphany that day, that when I read the letter, you know, as if his voice was talking to me. You know, I can't tell you, but all I know is it was truly meant to be. I needed to help this boy. Needed. I almost like heard his voice saying, help me. And if you would have asked me this years ago, I would have said, how can I do this? And here we are, 21 years later, 52 countries, over 1,400 visits from children, because we help children until they're 21, because the Shriners, bless them, they had read about, actually they heard me on television talking about what had happened, and they reached out. They said, listen, we can help you, you know, with children, because this is what we do here for free. And so why not? And that's when I just started the charity. I mean, really, you know, living in my one-bedroom townhouse and working paycheck to paycheck. And I started the charity, and it started with Bosnia, so many children. Then it was Liberia. Then it was the earthquake in Ecuador. And then the war broke out in Iraq. And then I would get dozens of emails a day from the military asking, can you help this child? Can you help that child? Because they had learned about what I did. And here I am, this one, I'm really literally working out of my walk-in closet, because that's where I you know, I started from my kitchen, and then I graduated to my closet, which I put a window in, and that was my office. And, I find myself going to Iraq and all these war-torn countries. And here we are today, and these children are wonderful. I feel it's a global family. After 60 minutes, the blessings of Tyler Perry, who had seen the segment, they called, his publicist called and said how, you know, he watched it and wants to know what you mean. I said, oh, my God, a house for the children, because I was housing them in a former orphanage, and then after that a Jesuit retreat house. A few children in the very, very beginning stayed with me. And so he and someone else that had seen the segment put money, and we got a house, and the house was called the Dead of Dream House. And it's a modest house, but a happy house, and it's right down the street from where I live, because I need to be connected to the charity 24/7. And these children come, and they come with their guardian. And the beautiful part of it, Todd, is that they come from different corners of the world. And you may have an Iraqi child, a Nepalese child, a Rwanda child, and they're all bonding and healing under one roof. And they may not speak the same language, but my God, they... it's beautiful to see that, you know, the world is being brought together under one roof, and they're learning about each other.
Yeah, Alyssa, you know, and what's beautiful about you just touched on it, it's really a rainbow of beautiful faces. For folks that are listening today that want to, you know, donate and get involved to your incredible organization, how do they reach out to Global Medical Relief Fund? What's the email address or contact info?
Okay, so, well, the website is gmrfchildren.org. That's George Mary Ralph Frank Children.org. The number is 718-448-6984. And the address is 112 McFarland, that's M-A-C as in cat, F-A-R-L-A-N-D, McFarland Avenue, Staten Island, New York, 10305. And they could go online. And, in fact, today, coincidentally, at 6:30, we have an online concert fundraiser. It's International Children's Day. And we have been doing something every year, annually, Children Helping Children. And we have two lovely, my God, talented. One is a cello, one is piano, and they play at Carnegie Hall, Albert Fisher. Anyway, if they go on our website, they will tune in. But we're not asking anyone for donations right now because, my God, it's such a fragile time. So we're attributing it to the frontline workers. However, it is a fundraiser, and whoever cares to, and if they can, whatever, anything, you know, nothing is too little. So we do fundraising. You know, we're very, very aggressive with that. There's only three of us working, but we reach out to the world. And, you know, we're making a difference. And, you know, the story about the starfish, about the little girl who's walking the beach, and this man sees her from afar, and he sees her running from the shore to the ocean, and what is she doing? As he gets closer, he sees she's throwing the starfish into the water, and there's thousands of these creatures, and the man says, oh girl, what are you doing? You can't possibly make a difference. And as she had one starfish in her hand and she tossed it into the ocean, she said, I just made a difference for that one, didn't I? So,
no question about it. You've been making a difference for over 20 years, Alyssa. You know, I had another really good friend on, Russ Holden, County for a Cure, and he talked about pieces, how one thing kind of pieces together, and it really kind of is the fabric of your life, how just things kind of come together. You don't even realize it, just the way things kind of work out. But one of the beautiful things that I wanted to talk about is really the Shriners, the doctors, the hospital, you know, everyone, the airlines, everybody comes together to help these kids from all over the world. I mean, for what you talked about, Bosnia, I read Pakistan, Iraq. I mean, these are kids that are so innocent, and they lost their limbs. I also read something. I have to say it was so barbaric with the albinism, where I guess it's the craziest thing. Could you talk a little bit about how you even bring these beautiful little kids to our great country to get healed and whole? What was that all about?
Horrific. You know, every child has a story. And these, I had learned about this little boy, 5 years old, that has albinism. And in certain countries, like Africa or Tanzania in particular, these monsters, I call them, they feel that it's a superstition that if you have a body part of an albino, you will have, it's a lucky charm. So witch doctors pay these people to go out into the villages at night, and they machete these children's limbs off. And you just can't wrap your head around what is happening. And I read about this five-year-old, and I said, oh, dear Lord. It took me 2 months to find him. And when I did, this organization called Under the Same Sun, which keeps them in a safe house, because once they're targeted, this will just keep happening. And they provide school. Anyway, I reached them, and they said, can you help 4 other children? I said, absolutely. And so we did. And they've been here 4 or 5 times already. In fact, they were supposed to come this March, but because of the pandemic, we're in such a state. And, you know, we have to wait until it's safe for them to come, safe for everyone. Until you read about it, you can't even imagine what's happening, you know. And each child, again, has a story, you know, the tsunami in Indonesia, how Hamdani, one of the boys, was literally dangling from a tree, you know, and lost his limb. And Iraq, the children coming home from school. In fact, one of the boys I went to get in Iraq, 7 years old, lost his sight and his arm. Coincidentally, that boy lives with me because he went back and forth, as they all come every year. And at 15, I asked his mother if I can take guardianship. And he's actually amazing. He's 23 right now, and he's taught himself by ear to play music. But anyway, these kids are an inspiration. They teach us. And we talk at schools, you know, and it's such an education for the children here, you know, on how blessed we are in this country. After 60 minutes, I was asked to write a book, and I did. I said, a book? And they said, yeah, you have a lot to write about. And it's called I'll Stand By You. And there's so much in that book. However, it stops in 2011, and there's so much that has happened after that. And I'm hoping one day I could tell my story on film, because and there is interest, and I'm hoping, because the charity needs support. People need to know, my God, you know, life is so much, so much bigger than our backyards, you know. Right now we're going through a horrible time, and that's why in this time, even though we have 3 children here, we can't bring other children yet. We are doing the food distribution, because thanks to City Harvest, we contacted them, and we're a 501c3, and with our own investment as well, in lieu of bringing children right now, we're having food. This will be our 3rd food distribution, June 20th. And we're trying to give back to the community. I know I'm all over the map right now, but it's such a terrible time, and we're trying to do all Plan Bs, so that's why we're doing this virtual concert online today. And we'll be doing more as well. And if anyone's interested, I would love for them to visit our website, our Facebook, and just learn about the children and, you know, what we do. And you know, we struggle. We struggle hard, especially now, because we're not a local, quote-unquote, charity. But we're making a big difference. And we're making a big difference in the community as well because, you know, we have volunteers and the schools are so engaged in what we do. You know, they want to do. They want to learn about what's happening.
Alyssa, I'm sorry. When you say the school, are you talking about the local schools in your area? Now, you're in Staten Island, right? So are you exposing the kids to the beautiful thing that you're doing? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. We're asked to talk. They do fundraisers, you know. They do little talent shows. They do little walks. They, you know, you know, they visit the children. My God, they come in the school bus, and then, you know, around Christmas time, they bring gifts, and they sing, they do Christmas carols. We have the Eagle Scouts that, you know, shoot up to their project, and they built the shed, and we have another Eagle Scout doing something with closets and whatnot. So it's an education, you know, and not only that, it's a wake-up call. It's such a wake-up call. No, because, yes, we have needs in this country, my God. But, you know, these children, some of their worst, best situations, their worst are our best. It's just, we just can't imagine what these children come from. And they go back, you know, with dignity. They go back and restore the youth. And that's what we do.
All right. So, Alyssa, for the listeners who really don't know the full beauty of your story and what you're doing and making these kids that are ravaged, lost legs, really whole and really become productive members of the world, walk us through. So you find out, sadly, a little kid, boy or girl, lost a limb or was ravaged by war, somehow they come under your auspices. Do you meet them at JFK? Walk us through kind of what you're all about, because it's really striking to me the beauty of yourself, what you're doing. And I think it's important. So kind of walk us through what you've been doing all these over 20 years. Walk us through those steps.
Okay. So for 11 years until 60 Minutes, I wrote grants. I traveled to different countries. You have to write the visas, raise money for the airlines, bring the children here, feed them, house them. And after that, we were, although we gained support, we also were flooded with requests. So it came from everywhere. It reached North India, where there was a Tibetan refugee camp, and this one boy who was electrocuted accidentally lost his arm, but he came. So what we do is we work with the embassies. The reason we raise money is to pay for the airlines, which is the most expensive. You know, it's like $60,000 or more a year just for that. So We you know, I started with maybe 5 kids a year. Now we're up to almost 40 children a year. So we raise money for that, and we write the visas, work with the embassy. We bring the children here, pick them up at the airport. I've established a wonderful relationship with the Customs and Border Protection, and they help us when the children come. They assist us through the whole process. So it's easier. We bring the children and the guardian aside, and we don't have to. I used to have to wait maybe 3-4 hours, especially coming from Iraq, because I've gone there several times. It was Homeland Security. Then we bring them back here, and we house them, feed them, clothe them, bring them back and forth to the hospital. Our main hospital is the Shriners Children's Hospital in Philly, although we also have Boston and Springfield, but mainly it's Philadelphia. And it's a 2-hour ride, and we go back and forth maybe twice a week. And they get fitted for their prosthetic, and while they're making it, they go back to be checked. And could be put their surgeries. Then there's local hospitals here, Northwell reaches out to us. And we help children in South America with them. We sponsor them. So what we do is, is pretty much everything. We do the fundraising. We do an annual every year, and we do little ones through the year. I'm involved in music, so I try to do as much little music project fundraiser as possible. And when the children here, it's your home away from home. You know, we try to provide whatever recreation we can with the budget we have. And we have volunteers. We have one volunteer that's a retired school teacher, and she comes and she tutors the children. We have arts and crafts. We take the children to the city. Well, not now, but we do. And we try to do as much as we can. We raise money for all of this.
And right, right. So, Alyssa, I didn't mean to interrupt, but for the listeners, I mean, it's like a rainbow coalition of these beautiful kids. They come to live basically with you, and, you know, they're going through so much. Now, there's language barriers. There's, you know, obviously cultural differences. But in reading about you and your mission, you talk about bringing hope, healing, and life-changing. Love is universal. You heal together. And I just love that. I mean, I just love the concepts. And the world needs more of this. And that's when I was watching and listening to kind of your mission. And I was just so compelled by it. And I wanted everybody to understand what you're really talking about, right? Is you're bringing people from all over the world. They've gone through devastating injuries. And then you kind of help them heal together. It's like a big family. Where do you think you got that inside, that strength, that energy, that desire to help these kids?
My parents, my father sailed the world, and he had a heart as big as the world he sailed, and open-minded, and my mother as well. You know, ever since I was a kid, there was no distinction in color, in any ethnic ethnicity, none at all. And, you know, when these children come and these guardians, you know, we bond. And, you know, when they turn 21, 23, now these kids, some of them are married in Bosnia. We reach out to all of them. You know, I mean, literally, when people say, do you have children? I say, yeah, about 400 all over the world. I love all of them, and, you know, I guess it's part of my genes, and love is a wonderful thing, and I love heals. Love heals, you know. And I feel blessed. People say, oh, you know, there was an article in People magazine, it was the saint of Staten Island. Don't misunderstand me, I appreciated it. But it was almost like, you know, it's become my label. And I feel that you don't have to be a saint to do good, you know. Anybody could do something to make a difference. And mine, this fell into my hands. It wasn't that I went to look to help children in foreign countries. It just happened when the music that started it, and then that's when I learned about what was happening, and then the letter was an awakening.
I have a question about music, Alyssa. You know, the song that you originally started for the Bosnia fundraising, which started all this incredible work you've done over 20 years, was Let's Do a Miracle. And I'm a believer in miracles. I lost my parents. They were wonderful people. But they believed in miracle and the power of hope and the power of healing and the power of, you know, trying to be really good people. And I just love that title, Let's Do a Miracle. Where did that come from, that idea of a miracle?
Well, I have strong faith. I'm not going to say that I am a religious person, but I have very strong faith. And God got me through this anxiety, and I really feel that Kenan was a miracle. And, I mean, who would ever think, working paycheck to paycheck, you know, coming home to my Newfoundland dog, which I loved music, and then going through this anxiety that came out of nowhere. It was like a bucket that just overflowed after so many losses. And I feel that it was a miracle. And so, you know, people say, why don't you say, let's make a miracle. No, let's do a miracle. I don't know, it was just right.
No, it's a beautiful thing, Alyssa. We're going to take a very short break and be back in 30 seconds with Alyssa Montanti, Global Medical Relief Fund.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So, Alyssa, when I was, once again getting ready for the show, I was watching some of the footage. I realized in 2011, things really did change dramatically for your incredible organization, where you got discovered. You're putting in all these years. You're working out of your small apartment. You're scrambling. You're just doing so much to help these kids. And a lot of people didn't know about it. And then, bam. God touches you, your incredible organization, with the 60 Minutes interview, right, in 2011. What was that like all of a sudden, for people to know what you've been doing for all those years?
I didn't know what hit me. And Scott Pelley had said to me, Alyssa, she was the one that interviewed, and they followed me for, 6 months. They came to Haiti with me right after the earthquake, when I was another whole story going, meeting with such adversity. Anyway, there was so much coming at them, they didn't know what they were going to focus on other than this woman working out of a walk-in closet speaking to the world. And so he said, you better get in on the server because you're going to crash. This is quite a story. And Kenan, the first boy that I helped, by the way, he's like my son. I mean, I may as well just have given birth to him. He's brilliant, and he stayed with me. Mainly because he was so bright, he was able to get sponsored, but to go to school. And so he's lived with me until 2 years ago, and now he's married. And God bless him, but he was the one to put like another, he's IT genius, and he put another server, and we did crash, but we went back up. I couldn't keep up with, we had the phone, the emails were coming in, like, for 1 month, the mail, the snail mail that came in, I would just sit, there was no other place but my floor, and I put the mail all over and read every single piece of mail. There was such an overwhelming amount of support. And, again, this helped us because we got the house. We were able to, help even more children. Obviously, it just kept growing. But I didn't know what hit me. I really didn't. It happened overnight.
Yeah, that was the thing, I was thinking about it. I mean, here you are doing so many incredible things, beautiful things, without really a lot of people knowing about it, out of your small apartment. And for the listeners, this is really, I find, really beyond inspirational. You're touching the world. You're working out of your small apartment in Staten Island. You're going all over the world, bringing these ravaged kids, these devastated kids to your home. They're living with you. You're healing them. You're healing yourself. And a lot of people didn't know about it. Then all of a sudden, Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes features you, and now people finally understood what you've been doing. And you talked about the house, and you talked a little bit before our break, and really just mentioned Tyler Perry, but what a remarkable actor, and he's really a genius too. But he got involved with your organization, and you created a Dare to Dream House. And I love the name Dare to Dream House. Can you just kind of walk us through again, like, what that meant to you and the kids and Global Medical Relief Fund when Tyler Perry and other benefactors got involved?
Well, the other donor was Miles Nadell, and he, MDC was his company. So it was actually his idea for the Dare to Dream, but it was the collaboration because it just worked. because, you know, dare to dream. And if you dare to dream, you know, you walk without fear.
Right.
So it's a happy house, and it means so much. People say, oh, my God, I just like to come because, you're feeling down. You go into that house, you walk out. I have a friend of mine that says that she just calls it a happy house. And it is a happy house. And you would think that, oh, my God, these kids have no limbs, or they've been disfigured from fires. And we have children who have had cancer and have had limbs had to be amputated. And how can you deal with all of this? This albinism, these children, poor sight, and they have no limbs. And one boy with the albinism, I mean, I hate to sound so graphic, but when they took his arms and part of the other arm, they tried to yank his tongue out. There's so much. But you walk into this house, these kids are resilient. These kids are happy. These kids are so well behaved. These kids are so appreciative. You buy an ice cream for these children and they're happy. How can you not be inspired by this? How? So I paint the door outside my Dare to Dream house yellow. And the two girls that work with me said, Lisa, you're really going to paint the yellow door? I said, I sure am. The house is like a bluish green with a big yellow door, and it's beautiful, and it's happy with sunshine.
Right, that's so definitely sunshine, yeah.
Is Dare to Dream.
Yeah, no question. The name Dare to Dream, and I love it. I mean, obviously, one of the things I try to do is lift everybody's spirits, and what you're doing today is hopefully lifting everyone's spirits about the beauty, the humanity of what you've been doing for all these years. But the name Dare to Dream House, how did that name come about? Who coined that phrase?
Actually, it wasn't mine. It was Miles Nadell. It was him. And when he said the Dare to Dream, he's the other person that had given in to buy the house. Tyler Perry put $200,000, and so did he. And then with the other money that we made, that we was generated from 60 Minutes, we added that.
Right.
And
no, it's beautiful. Right.
It was him, and I said that can't be. That's something I would title it. Really
no, it's an incredible. I mean, certainly I gravitated to it. I certain names that stick out in your mind. And for the listeners, you know, once again, go on to Elisa's site, Global Medical Relief Fund, and you'll be staggered by the beauty. And you know, I read also you called it the mini UN, and it really is. I mean, yeah. You have kids from all parts of the world, and it's really striking just how everybody gets along. And you sing and you dance, and you're making these kids love, making them whole. And I was thinking, Elisa, the kids bring a lot of love to the house. What's that like when you feel the love, you see the love, you see the healing? Over the years, because, I mean, you've been doing it so long, did you ever think, you know, after 20-plus years, all the love and all the healing you were able to bring so far?
Yeah. You know, yes, I do. Because I'm constantly reminded by it. You know, I have Kenan, who's lived with me all these years from 97. And he was a constant reminder, you know. And if you're having a bad day, you look at Kenan, he has one limb. You know, he was missing two arms and a leg. And it's amazing what this kid has done with his life. Ahmed lives with me now. He's blind and has one arm. And, you know, when I lost my Newfoundland, I'm a big animal lover, and I had my Newfie, Shiloh. And when when I had to put him to sleep, it affected me in such a way, you know, because I was just broken. And at the time, you know, I said, I want to see. Ahmed was living with me at the time, but another boy, they were both here, Nawan, who lost his two arms, the boy after 60 minutes from the Tibetan boy. And I said, I have to be with them, you know, because I was crying so hard. And they were such a comfort. They were such a comfort, you know. I can't explain it. These kids are a gift to me. They're a gift to me, you know, and they just constantly remind you about love, about healing, about purpose. And about why we're here.
Right. I also, you know, reading last night, I was actually getting ready for just to make sure I covered. There's so much to cover with you, Lisa. You've done so much. It's really remarkable. And I do think there should be a movie about you. It's just what you've done is just candidly, it's something I've really never heard about before. You also were involved in this Brave conference where you talked about success being fueled by passion. And I always like to figure out what lights someone's fire, the passion, where does it come from? Because if you don't have passion in life, you're kind of going through the motion. So that's really no way to live. You only live once. And you got to seize the day and try to help as many people as you can. Where do you think, you know, this whole idea of passion and bravery, where do you think that comes from in a person?
I don't know. You know, sometimes I wonder if I'm normal. I have so much passion because whatever it is, you know, I like to write, I like to sing, I love music, it is a passion. I love to paint. Through this pandemic, you know, I find myself painting, which I haven't done in a while. And whatever it is I do, I have passion. So I guess it's in us, you know, my charity is my ultimate passion. You know, I don't know. Again, I attribute it to my parents, and I'm a native Staten Islander. I was here before the bridge when Staten Island was just beautiful. And I just appreciate, you know, just appreciate a lot of things, I guess. And it's good to appreciate.
Well, I appreciate everything you're doing, because when you were talking about the bravery, I was reading about the bravery conference you had attended. You talked about a few things, tips for bravery, and I figured I'd kind of go through them briefly with you. You wrote the following. You step out of the comfort zone. You fake it till you make it. And don't let negativity consume you. You know, don't let it build up walls. Believe in yourself and your values. And for all of us, I mean, these are really wonderful concepts to try to live by. What are your thoughts about what I just read to you about why you felt that was so important in terms of your mission?
Yeah, well, if, you know, you need, in the beginning when I was going through my anxiety, and then Kenan came into my life, and then I went to Bosnia to find children, I literally faked it till I made it, because it was bigger than me. It was bigger than my anxiety, and I needed to be brave because I needed to step out of my comfort zone, because I wasn't even leaving the house for a long time except to go back and forth to work. And, you know, I just needed to be brave because this was so much bigger than me. You know, when I went to Iraq, when I went to Haiti, when I went to these countries, and when I went to the border of Syria, you know, I'm just the Lisa. You know, this whole thing is so much bigger than me, and it has purpose. So that's where the bravery comes in. You need to be brave. We all need to be brave. You know, you know, where did it come from? It comes from within. You know, it's something that's bigger than yourself.
Yeah, you know, you talked about, you know, you've gone all over the world bringing these kids back to the United States for life-saving treatment to change their lives. And you keep on talking, rightfully so, about Kenan, the young boy from Bosnia, 11-year-old that lost multiple limbs in this very sad landmine accident while playing soccer, which is just a crazy concept to even think about. Just, you know, we're in the United States, and these kids, sadly, you know, were losing limbs, ravaged by war. And how successful he's been, and I can tell the pride that you have. But this is once again where, Elisa, you're changing people's lives. I know you changed yours, certainly, and so much for the better, but also these kids. And I was reading, like, these are your family members. And what was also interesting is it's not just one and done. They keep on coming back, right, because they have to get fitted for new prosthesis. They need follow-ups. So you have these relationships, and I was watching some footage of, like, the kids coming back through JFK, and you're hugging and kissing them. And that was just a beautiful thing to watch. And I tell everyone that's listening today, go to Global Medical Relief Fund, and you'll really see what I'm talking about. But what is that like, that continuity of those relationships, and to watch these kids start to grow and mature and start to stand on their own with their own legs now, after losing their legs, standing on their own, able to write, education? I mean, you must take so much joy and pride in that.
I do. It's purpose. Yeah. I have a humongous amount of pride for it. You know, when I see what Ken and what he has accomplished, what Ahmed has accomplished, what so many children go back to their country, they can contribute to society, they can walk to school, they can learn. You know, in these countries, the terrain isn't like it is here, so they can't. How are they going to walk without a limb? You know, now they're able to. Now they're able to put a pen in their hands because they didn't have a prosthetic limb. You know, it's a challenge, but they do it. You know, they overcome. And, you know, it's a sense of, I'm proud. I'm proud of it. You know, and it makes me feel I'm here for a reason. You know, we're all here for a reason. But while we're passing through, let's make a difference.
No, and you certainly have. You've helped over 400 kids, 51 countries. I mean, you know, you're going basically all over the world with your big heart and bringing people in. We talked a little bit about, you know, the incredible Shriners. I mean, everybody jokes with their caps, but I mean, these are beautiful people that are really reaching out and helping kids, you know, that need the help. Who else is going to help these kids? They have nothing. They basically have nowhere to turn in life, and there you are with the remarkable doctors. I have a great friend of mine, Dr. Goldstein. He's a dentist. He's been on the show. It's his birthday today, though. Shout out to Dr. Glenn Goldstein. But he also donates his time to help others. And I love people that just use their God-given gifts and help others. I've had Dr. Mary Lo Fermento, local doctor in Morristown Medical Center, went out to Haiti, other doctors, dentists, really giving back. And it's a beautiful thing. What's that like to see the teamwork, Elisa, when you see all that come together? What's that like?
It's wonderful. I mean, I have a relationship with the Shriners for 20 years. Because at first, Kenan wasn't initially helped from the Shriners. That's when I helped him on a personal level. And it was the reason I found the charity, and then that's when the Shriners had seen me on local television and reached out. They are my lifeline. They are my lifeline. They are wonderful. And we have such a phenomenal relationship. You know, the chief of staff, Dr. Scott Cozen, is just amazing. A humanitarian. He does mission trips. So, you know, the whole, we're in a pool. The network is this pool of giving and making a difference, and that affects your life because you're around those people. You know, you're around people that are so giving and have purpose.
No question about it. I mean, like I said, I've been so blessed to have remarkable guests on, and I kind of joke about it, but if you hang around really good people, hopefully that's going to rub off on you. And what you're talking about is a network of really beautiful people that are just trying to do the right thing and help. And the world needs more of that, and to focus more on the greatness of people instead of these stories that are heartbreaking. Talk about the uplifting people, because there's so many wonderful things. So, Elisa, we talked a little bit about 60 Minutes, and it changed the trajectory of your life and your incredible organization. I keep on saying incredible. I'm pretty loquacious, but it's hard to really come up with adjectives on really what you stand for. It's beyond beautiful. It's beyond humanity. The CNN Heroes also changed in terms of your people knowing about you, because it's obviously very well documented. CNN, rightfully so, focuses at times, sometimes too much on the bad things in the world, but the Heroes was really beautiful. In 2018, you know, you were selected as one of the CNN Heroes. What was that experience like?
It was really cool. You know, I was like, what? When they called me. They followed me for a while, you know. And then it was 12 hours of filming. And at that time I had two children from Gambia, Africa, and a child from Pakistan. And a boy was, let me see, Brian, yeah, from Ecuador. And so they followed me, and it was, you know, it was something like 60 Minutes, you know, but not as intense. And you know, it was great. I was the top, I think, 19 or 20. Yeah. And it was really nice. You know, it was really nice to be a CNN hero.
Well, no, I mean, listen, not only was it so well-deserved, but once again, the images, and it told such a beautiful story of love and hope, and it just hit me in the heart. I mean, I was watching you, and I know I emailed back and forth with you a little bit about it, but there's some images of you with these beautiful kids who don't have arms or don't have legs, and you're in a fountain, and it's just beautiful. I mean, it just spoke to me. And once again, I would tell people to visit your site and just look at some of these images, and you'd be like, wow, this Elisa Montanti, talk about the real deal, and talk about the love. And a picture could exude love. Those images, at least in my perspective, really talk about love. Do you get a lot of feedback like that in terms of people once they watch the beautiful interview and what you're all about with CNN?
Yes. There was positive feedback. Of course, you have your people that, you know, why do you help children from other countries, which, you know, at first I'd be, like, angry and hurt. And now I just, you know, if people feel that way, I just feel sorry for them, you know. But for the most part, people are loving and people appreciate. And everybody says, oh, I wish I could do something. Everybody can do something. Whatever it is, you can do something to make a difference. But it is wonderful and very heartwarming when people respond and comment, you know. Makes you feel like you're doing the right thing.
When there's no question you're doing the right thing, and for folks that somehow have the crazy concept that why aren't you helping people in the United States, they got it all wrong. You're just showing your humanity and helping the world. You're lifting the world. And you're also, Elisa, you know, really leading by example. Because what we were talking about earlier, you started in a little apartment in Staten Island. Nobody knew anything about you, who you were, what you're all about. And fast forward 20 plus years later, I mean, you're touching the world and making a huge difference. Why, if you can, Elisa, I know you talked again about, you had, or if we can talk again about, you have another fundraiser tonight. For the folks that are listening this morning, or you know, we have a lot of great listeners, big hearts, and they really do want help. How would they reach out to help you raise funds and the awareness of what you're standing for?
Yeah, just reach out to us. You know, you can go on our website, gmrfchildren.org. Today, tune in, you know, at six tonight. They could email us. They could ask any questions they want to bring awareness, and any donation is nothing is too small. You know, we struggle, especially now. But I always feel that 5 to 12, that will be the name of my film, if it ever happens. 5 minutes to midnight. It's always been. You know, just when things are the darkest, something happens. I can help the next child. So, you know, please contact us, you know, whatever interest you may have. We really, really would appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, obviously it's a challenging time for, you know, the world is going through a lot, but there's still a lot of people that have big hearts and want to help out and lift others. Hopefully this morning we've touched a lot of hearts, and folks would go onto your website and really see the beautiful imagery. I know you had authored a book called I'll Stand By You, and what's that experience like to be involved in writing a book? I've never written a book. Maybe one day I will. Who knows? But what's it like to write a book?
It was crazy. Well, I didn't write it. I talked it, and then someone wrote it for me, but Jen Hopp. But it was, you know what? She touched upon my childhood, so she had to get in my head. And it was, yeah, I was reliving my life. I was reliving some good and not so good things, but it was good to get it out, and it really has helped, you know, with the charity in the sense that people learned about what it was all about up until that time. You know, it was an experience, and now even with, you know, they want to do a biopic on my story, and that's happening all over again, but even more intense because now it's going from childhood to now. You know, and a lot. You know, I tell the children's stories. I tell the adversity and, you know, the anxiety, the love, the heartbreak, the joy. And, you know, it's all in there.
Well, that's life. I mean, listen, Elisa, that's life. I mean, you know, but what you've done is incredible. But what you just touched upon is also... And I talked about this initially, is your willingness to share your story in terms of what you went through before, you know, you became known as the founder of Global Medical Relief Fund, is your life story, your journey, the adversities, the challenges, but also how you rose above. And as we talk, you're touching the world. You're bringing the world closer together. And we really need that right now more than ever, in my opinion, is to bring our country and the world closer together instead of all the fighting and all of the polarization. Is we should be united together.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the beautiful things about watching you interact with the kids are the love that you show and the love the kids show for you as well. Before we conclude, Elisa, what's your future? Tell us a little bit more about what you see for your future with Global Medical Relief Fund and just you in general. Where do you see yourself in the next 15 or 20 years? Because you're very young still, and you got a lot of energy and a lot in the tank, you know. What do you think your future is going to be?
You know what? With the world as fragile as it is, you know, we have earthquakes and war, unfortunately. You know, there's so much, and I just see it growing. But we need to grow in the sense of being able, you know, the children we help, they're not just new children that keep coming to us. We're committed to all the children, you know, the follow-up until they're 21. So my hope is that we are able to sustain and just keep doing this and maybe build up, you know, maybe from my mouth to God's ears, you know, have another house. There's just so much, you know, because we are committed. We have children. We have babies. We have a baby here now that's 2 years old, two of them. One's two and one's three. So now we have to follow up with them until they're 21. We are committed. So now, in the meantime, all new children are coming into the picture. So my hope and my vision is that, you know, people will be sensitive to what we do and support us.
Well, no, I mean, certainly there's a need of what you just touched on. I mean, sadly, there's always going to be kids injured and they're going to need help and they're going to need a place to turn. But, Elisa, what you stand for now is hope for the kids. But it's even bigger than that. It's hope for humanity, the hope for people that know there are people like you out there. There's wonderful people. I love to see a Dare to Dream House throughout our country and really throughout the world. Maybe, God willing, people will gravitate to your remarkable cause. So, Elisa, I just want to thank you again for joining us this morning. I know you have a very busy calendar. You know, I know CNN called you a hero, but you're certainly a hero to me without any hesitation.
Thank you so much.
And Elisa, what the other beautiful thing is, you're making miracles happen every day. Every day you make miracles. So God bless you. It means the world. So I want to wish you all the blessings in life and all the kids, the beautiful kids. Next Sunday, everyone, we're going to have John McAlevey on. He was injured in a really significant accident, was partially paralyzed, and he's been giving back ever since. He has another remarkable story of hope and courage. And that's really what we're all about on the Todd Leonard Show. It's bringing people on who share it, who are talking about their life's journey and making the world a better place. If you know people that are like that, the Alyssa Montantes of the world, the people that are making it better for all of us, contact me at thetoddleonardshow.com. Give me a call, 973-920-7900. You know, just go on the website and you'll see some remarkable stories. People like Elisa Montanti make the world better. So God bless. Enjoy this beautiful rest of the day today. You got an early start. And remember, take care of each other. We're in this together. Take care.